My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times.
Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. I'm excited for my guest today, Joanna Boyd. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
I have been watching Joanna on Instagram for the last little while, and I am super impressed with what you're doing and then the message that you're getting out there, Joanna. So when I asked my assistant to see if you would join my podcast and you said yes, I was like fangirling a little bit. I was like so excited.
Flattering.
So I'm going to introduce you to all my listeners. So Ms. Boyd was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. She attended Georgia State University, where she studied the legal issues track in criminal justice and sociology. She then attended Atlanta's John Marshall Law School, where she became an active member of the Student Bar Association, Black Law Student Association, and Georgia Association of Women Lawyers, Criminal Law Society, and Family Law Society. Ms. Boyd has worked through cases dealing with divorce, alimony, child custody, everything encompassed when it comes to family law issues. She also enjoys volunteering for multiple nonprofit organizations and has experience in public speaking. She has mediation training as approved by the Georgia Office of Dispute Resolution and has proven herself to be prepared for all negotiations or courtroom appearances. As a mother, Ms. Boyd is keen to advocate for clients seeking an outcome that is in the best interest of their children. Outside of the courtroom, she is committed to creating the best possible life for her little one and is not afraid to use the same advice she gives on a daily basis to do so. Ms. Boyd is a huge fan of football and follows her home team, Atlanta Falcons. She is also a lover of music, dance, art, and all things creative. That's amazing. Welcome to the show, Joanna.
Thank you so much, Ms. Paul.
And you can call me Jill. I know that you are super Southern. I am from Utah, even though I live in Dallas now. And we can be a little less formal, which sometimes I know is hard. I get called Miss Jill all the time. And I'm always like, it makes me feel old, which is weird because I think I would like it better than ma'am. But
well, I can go with Jill. I'm fine with that, too.
Whatever. All right. So I want to hear a little bit more about your backstory and like how you kind of got to where you are right now.
I like to think that family law chose me. I always wanted to get into criminal defense and politics and dealing with mass incarceration, racial disparity in the criminal justice system. And I had all of these things I wanted to do. And then I also had bills and I couldn't find a job.
Yeah.
And I actually found a family law job first while I was in law school. And it's crazy because I was really, really good at it very early on. From there, I continued on that path to a couple of other firms, finished school, got out of school, then already had the blueprint for how to work those cases. So it was pretty easy to kind of jump out there and get things going from there.
That's amazing. I kind of have the same similar story. Like when I came out of law school, I wanted to be a prosecutor. And it was in 2007 when the economy was just tanking. So all government jobs have frozen. And so I just had to find a job. And it ended up being at a small boutique law firm. And he ended up doing everything litigation and would just throw all the family law cases at me. And yeah. So that's how I got introduced to family law as well.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. Well, and you probably agree with this, but family law takes a certain kind of personality.
Oh, yeah.
And I've decided that there's two kinds of attorneys that do family law. There's the ones like us that were called to it, have the personality and the ability to really advocate and do good work for these people, where I would say is probably one of the hardest areas of law to practice in. But then there's the second type of family law attorney that does it just for the money.
Right.
Which is funny because there's not a lot of money in it. It's like,
if you wanted money, I don't know that you would jump up and down for family law. ton of work. Yeah.
And now tell me about where you're working right now. You own your own firm.
I do.
Yeah. And so tell me about your experience coming to that journey.
Well, you just got to put your best foot forward. You know, everybody's not going to tell you. Law school doesn't teach you how to practice. That's one thing. That's one misconception. People tend to think, you know, you learn it all there. You don't. It comes from experience. And of course, whatever jobs you have don't really teach you how to run a business, right? So that's something that you have to kind of pick up along the way. But what I do love about having my own firm is I get to kind of set standards of what we stand for, what's acceptable, what is not, and kind of, you know, make sure that the voice that others are hearing properly reflects what we represent. So that's been the best part of it, as opposed to pushing someone else's brand.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you start your firm?
That would be September 1st, 2020.
Which was right after COVID? Yeah.
During COVID, the middle of COVID. I know that's crazy, right? I definitely did. Something said go and I went. And here we are.
I know.
Doing really well too. Sometimes, you know, you get that voice and you just know that's what you're supposed to do. And that's usually the voice that I follow. So.
Yeah. My career is a little bit backwards than most people. So I went to Texas Southern University in Houston, which I was going to say, like, Michael T. Sterling was a classmate of mine. So he's kind of prolific in the Atlanta area for what he's doing and who he's married to. That's my like claim to fame of Atlanta. But I went through like where I worked at that small litigation firm. And then I moved to Utah, took the bar there. Worked at another small father's rights firm. Then I worked for Cordell and Cordell, which I'm sure you know who they are because they are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that was a horrible experience. And then I worked my way to, you know, one of the largest law firms in the state of Utah. So, you know, on partner track, like thinking this is going to be kind of where I'm going to end. Realizing that big law firms for family law makes no absolute sense because, you know, we live and die by the billable. You know that we can only bill a certain amount, whereas corporate lawyers can bill astronomical amount of money because for some reason. And so I was making all this money for a big, huge law firm that wasn't even turning around and giving me a marketing budget. So. So I did what you did. And in 2014, I left the comfort of a law firm and I started my own firm. And now I've grown it. I mean, in Utah, we're one of the largest family law firms in the state. Right. I have to say one of the largest because I haven't literally gone through every firm and counted, but I am almost positive we are the largest, but just to be
nice.
Safe. You know, we have 12 attorneys now that work for us and you know, one of the things I really recognized when I started my own law firm is that exactly what you said, like I got to set the standard. Mm-hmm. I knew I was a good attorney and I was like, if I could teach this or I could replicate it in some way, then we're going to be able to help a lot more people than just what I can help by myself. And that's what we've been doing. So what kind of drew you to the father's rights side of that?
I've always kind of been an advocate for the underdog, I like to call it, people who don't have as much of an advantage. I lost my dad when I was very young, 15. I was 15. And I noticed how big of a role that played. I had family members who didn't have a dad involved. In comparison to some who did. And I have family members who just don't have a relationship with their child for one reason or the other, who are also fathers. And it's just it's a bigger deal than people make of it. And so out of everything that you can pick in family law, I wanted to pick something that was near and dear to me. And that turns out to be it.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Let's talk now the difference of Utah and Atlanta or Georgia law, because I don't know anything about Georgia. So I kind of want to talk about it because in Utah and Texas, where I'm from, But mostly, let's just start in Utah. There's no presumption of parent time. So when I started practicing in 2010 in Utah, they look at the primary caretaker, which is very, very similar to a lot of other states. And so they look at, you know, who's been feeding the kid, who's picking them up and dropping them off at school, who's taking them to the doctor, who's doing parent-teacher conference, who does homework. And it was a very gender, what I would say, biased role. Mm-hmm. And it completely discounted if you were like a financial provider of the family. Exactly. And, you know, back in 2010, it was very, very common for fathers to get every other weekend, just minimum time, which was in Utah. And so I kind of wanted to start there, but we've definitely seen a shift in the last 12 years of me practicing, 13 years. That's not such the case anymore. We still don't have a presumption of parent time. They still look at who the primary caretaker is for purposes of like who's going to have the extra overnight or where the kids are going to go to school with. Mm-hmm. But because of that, I still feel like it is a fight for a dad to get equal time if that's what they so choose. So I kind of wanted to hear what's Atlanta's or Georgia's process in figuring that out as well?
So there's no presumption here either. Not on paper anyway, right? I think the bigger problem we have here in Georgia is that when you have a child outside of wedlock, the father has absolutely no right to the child.
That's the same in Utah.
Okay, same. So you have to go through the entire legitimation process before you are allowed to have any custody rights or enjoy any of that decision-making or time at all. And it's almost weaponized more than it's helpful. And reason being, I'll give you an example. I have cases where we could do this all day. I've had cases where, you know, a petition was filed when the baby was born, same week. And this father still didn't get a chance to see or be with this child until the child was about one. Mm. You know, oh, the court is backed up. You can't get to court. They don't want to agree. There's nothing we can do, you know. And it's a bit of an uphill battle. And it puts these dads in a situation where even if they're wanting to be involved or wanting to be, you know, a part of all of this, they can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing in Utah. Our paternity statutes are just like that as well. Like you can sign the declaration of paternity when the child's born and you can be on the birth certificate, but it gives you no legal right to that child. Yeah. It gives the mom legal right to get child support and medical support from you, but it gives you no legal right. And a lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. I would assume that, you know, Utah is a very high percentage of marriage rate. Like everybody gets married here. Right. So we probably don't see it as much as you, but I would assume that that's a major issue. Do you see like anybody in the legislation, like trying to change that?
Oh, there's this house bill that's been up for a while. I need to follow up on it. Last I checked, it hadn't passed. It's HB 96. And what it's supposed to do is change that presumption. And I don't know how that's helpful with legitimation, because even still, you have to get legitimated. So, you know, it's supposed to change the presumption from nobody to joint. So mm-hmm. You walk in the courtroom joint. That'd be great if they actually apply it. We know how discretionary family law is, and I don't know how many cycles of judges you probably have to go through before you actually see someone implement it, but kudos to them for bringing it up. I just think that there's nothing on the book that's talking about changing legitimation, or I just feel as though once you've established paternity, I don't know why there are all these extra steps.
Right.
You know, and paternity can be established during pregnancy.
Right.
I mean, if that were the case, we could knock that out pretty early. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is oftentimes relationships fall apart. I don't know if you have children or not. I know. Even
I have four.
You have four. Well, then, you know, yep. Your mood changes. Everything changes. It takes a lot to stay together when you procreate. And a lot of people don't make it after children. They could have had a great relationship prior to kids, you know. And it almost enables the mom it's not even an almost, it does pretty much enable mom to kind of use that child as a weapon again, you know, mm-hmm. out of anger or spite or whatever it might be. A lot of times that's what we see. Very rare. And, you know, I get a lot of lash back on, well, what if it's not a good dad? Okay. And we see that sometimes, not often, you know, it's hard to say, you know, the court doesn't really work retroactively. The court's not proactive. Something right. happens and then the court says, okay, we're going to stop this from happening. It's not, oh, I think he's going to do something wrong. I think it has to be something that's happened or is fairly reasonably going to happen, right?
Right.
As opposed to this is what I think without giving someone the opportunity to actually be a parent.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's where the problem is coming in because it works both ways.
Yep.
So now you can't get in there and show that you're a good parent because you haven't done that yet. And of course, they're not keeping you from trying to be a good parent. You just got to get in there first.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many issues with it as well, because like, first of all, in Utah, child support's tied to exactly how many overnights you have. So, right. If you want more child support, you're going to clearly fight for more overnights. So right there.
How much is kind of there?
Yeah. So you see it used as a weapon a lot,
mm-hmm.
In Utah, whereas in Texas, it doesn't matter if you have joint or sole conservatorship, your child support's the same.
Okay.
So that takes that down a ton to fighting over and, you know, using custody or parent time as a weapon.
Right.
And I agree with you, like, especially with, you know, if they're not married and maybe they're a little bit younger, or they don't have any other kids. That's a big argument I feel like we hear a lot is like, oh, he doesn't know how to be a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't know how to be a mom until exactly. you just like had that baby. Like you're all learning started. There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I loved what you said. Like we speak a lot of very similar, I think things is that, you know, you talk about like, well, what if he's a bad dad? Exactly. Like what if he's a great dad? There's a lot of times where we like to combine the fact that he was a bad partner
mm-hmm.
with that. Therefore he's a bad parent. And exactly. So I'm always telling people like, you have to separate that. Like you have to separate the bad person, which mm-hmm. great, you're divorcing him or you're leaving him. You don't have to be together with that bad, you know, person that you didn't connect with anymore, but it doesn't necessarily, make it so that they're automatically a bad parent. And I talk about this a lot. Like if you guys, the way that you can start being on the same page of co-parenting, even if you guys do not agree or see anything eye to eye, is you can start at least this base, you know, at the basement, you can get to the very ground floor and you can look at each other and say, I want what's best for my child.
Mm-hmm.
And you want what's best for our child.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. If you get to that very, very basic, you know, belief that you both want what's best for your child, maybe you don't do it in the same way. Maybe you have different tactics of parenting.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you want what's best for your child. So, so let him be part of that child's life.
Right.
And
you know, it's always a red flag anyway for me, because I have a kid and I don't know a lot of parents who are just like, no, nobody can help me physically care for this child. I have a 3-year-old. Come on and get him and take him with you. I'll see you guys, you know, whenever you get back. It's very difficult. And I do think that child support is a bit of a incentive on both ends. In all honesty, you know, you have that deviation when you have joint custody. So sometimes you run across dads who, oh, I want joint custody and no child support. Well, let me ask you this. Do you still want joint custody if the court says they're not going to grant the deviation? Well, I want the deviation. Well, then you're not thinking about custody, you know.
Right.
And then you have situations where it's just not fair. If I keep this child half of the time, then we should be able to work this out, especially if the income is relatively similar.
Right.
But I think that money is not, it's not necessarily raising a child. You can't pay for what the dad can contribute to actually child rearing, right?
Right.
Getting up early in the morning, making sure the baby is ready for school, taking them to school, bath routine. All of those things take a lot of time and effort, planning meals, fixing meals, so on and so forth. There's no amount of money that's going to give you that back, the experience or just having to do the work itself. So I think it still plays a major role outside of the monetary aspect.
Well, and I always ask my dads when they come to me and they're like, I want 50-50. I look at them, I say, okay, let's talk about it. Have you been a 50-50 dad in the marriage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they're telling me, well, like, no, my wife took care of all that. I'm like, do you think a court's then going to look at you and say, oh yeah, we should just give you 50-50. Like, that's what we have to look at. Like, the court's still going to do what's in the best interest of the child. And 50-50 is not guaranteed. We've, for the last 2 years, we have tried to pass a bill where 50-50 is the presumption. And then, you know, then you're fighting to why that shouldn't be. And I don't know why, but the family law section fights so hard against it. They think that it is going to increase conflict, which I absolutely disagree. I think it will decrease conflict. And it will make those people come to court to show why 50-50 doesn't work, rather than for these people that know 50-50 should be the standard, have to fight for that. I don't.
Exactly. I agree.
But like, it's just, but if you can, if you come to me and you're like, no, I want 50-50 and you're not, you haven't been a 50-50 dad, then, you know, we're going to have that hard talk about, well, maybe 50-50 doesn't make sense for you. Yeah, as you said to your three-year-old being hard, I mean, I make the joke all the time that sometimes I daydream of having joint custody with my husband so that I can, every other week sounds amazing.
That'll be great, right?
You know, great. And of course, I love my husband. I don't want to divorce him, but man, that would be great. And so anyways, I just try to talk to people a lot about that and doing father's rights for so long before I started my own firm. And now we represent really high net worth, high conflict cases. So, so my firm does really tough custody cases, you know, when there is abuse or when there is something there that we really have to work through or when there is just high conflict. And we have to work through that. But,
and you know what? Sometimes two really great parents become like the most difficult case. Because how do you figure this out? Especially if you're dealing with a judge who, you have judges who will tell you flat out, I don't do joint custody. And it's like, okay. You know, I tell my clients all the time, joint custody is like having primary half of the time. You know?
Yeah.
But you come to me and you want joint custody. I'm like, well, what's the baby's pediatrician name? Oh, I don't know. Well, what's their teacher's name? I don't know. Well, what are they studying right now? I don't know. You know what I mean? And it's just, you have to kind of put yourself in the position of what you want before you ask for. That way, when we get there, you can say, hey, these are all of the things that I'm involved in. I know all about the whole routine. I think another issue that I run into a lot when dealing with shared parenting time is the two very different homes, right? Joint custody is usually for parents who get along at least well enough to keep some continuity between the house. Because imagine being a kid and you come into one house, you got this set of rules, you know, these standards, these morals, and you go to another house and it's completely different and now you're switching back and forth. It's a lot. So you need to, you want to have a co-parent where the two of you are on the same page just to keep the child on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been so many studies in the last several years about the importance of having both parents at frequent and consistent contact with the children. And, you know, just a little backstory, and you probably know this, but, you know, back in the 90s, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it was just automatic. Like, dad's got minimum time, mom got custody.
For sure.
Because it was just understood that because moms had been the caretakers and been the stay-at-home moms, that made sense. Well, in the 90s, you know, they're studying the 80s and 90s, they're studying these kids of divorce who are, you know, dropping out of high school, drug issues, teen pregnancy, and they're just seeing this trend. And you know, at first it was like, you get divorced, your kids are just screwed, basically.
Right.
But what they were able to find is that the kids that were actually having a consistent, frequent contact with both parents were the ones that were doing so well. And there's been a couple things that have been studied and been found from this. So like the first thing is that there's an order of how of the best success for your children. And the first is obviously if you stay married and you have a good working relationship. Mm-hmm. The second one is if you are divorced, but really good co-parents and keep that continuity like you were talking about. And then the third is if you stay married, but are in a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, a lot of people were surprised to hear that, but kids mm-hmm. in a divorced family with two very healthy, well-behaved parents will do much better than staying married in a miserable situation.
Absolutely.
And because of these studies that, you know, like the leaders like Dr. Warshak and all these people have been doing, is it showed that minimum time, at least that's what Utah is now adopting, is minimum time. And when I say minimum time, that sounds like Friday night to Sunday night, every mm-hmm. other weekend, and then maybe like a midweek dinner or whatever, mm-hmm. Was not enough time. And mm-hmm. And so they really wanted to not necessarily like equalize it, but give these kids more frequent, consistent contact with both parents. So Utah, like, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, adopted this like 60-40 split mm-hmm. where it takes that every other weekend, but it adds the Sunday overnight. So you have Friday to Sunday or Monday morning, mm-hmm. but then that midweek that you normally would get became an overnight. So Thursday overnight. So you'd get Thursday to Monday 1 week and then a Thursday overnight on the off week. Mm-hmm. And that has been kind of a really popular schedule in Utah that a lot of people are working. I just didn't know, like in Georgia, have they like proposed something like this? Is that a schedule that you're working? Or
I am very creative with my parenting plan.
Okay.
Especially anytime you get to present it, you know, you have your reasoning why you think it's better. And so I get very creative. I usually would do a Friday to Monday, especially if the parents don't get along, because now the argument is, look, you don't have to see each other as much. You're going to pick up from school. You're going to drop off at school. So all the toxicity, you know, that was going on before, you should be able to miss that part, right? A lot of times I will try to get in a Thursday. You just start tacking on days. I will do a Thursday to Monday, right? And then do the midday in between. It just depends on the parties. It depends on what's going on. Especially if you have someone that lives relatively far, the closer they live together, the more time I end up asking for. All of those things kind of play a role, but I like to, I don't have a one set, you know. Georgia's standard time is usually like a Friday to Sunday, and then at one overnight during the week, that's standard. And then, of course, split holiday.
Okay.
I generally would start with like a Friday to Monday.
Okay.
And then work up from there. So.
And in Georgia, does it matter? Like, where do you go? I don't know what you guys call it. Is it conservatorship or custody? Where do you go from like being sole or primary to like joint?
Well, it's just you have two types of custody, legal and physical. All you have is the primary physical custodian, and then you have like a secondary. It's not even called secondary. You just have a primary, and then you have the other parent who has the parenting time. So
whoever has one more overnight will be considered the primary custodian.
Yeah. And I mean,
and do you see, and do you see like so many problems with that as well?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, that's the difference right there. I've seen people fight for just that little bit of overnight just to claim the child support. Yeah. And that's where your, you know, your deviations come into play, because now you can ask for a parent time deviation. Hey, we basically have joint custody. I think you should knock the majority of this off, because while the kid is with me, he's also running up my electricity. I have to pay for food and things of that nature while they're here. And those are arguments, you know, you have to leave it to the court. And that's the really sticky thing about all of this. These courts have all of the discretion. I don't know what type of parenting plan they have in their own life, or whether or not they feel a way. I don't know if their wife cheated on them and these facts reminded me. I don't know, you know, and you get in front of these judges and you're hoping that they're being unbiased when they're making these decisions. But that's all you can really do, because even the law tells you, it'll give you all this list of stuff and then it'll say, at the court's discretion. So it's almost like, why even give us this list, right? So you kind of try to learn your judges. Who is this judge? Are they something? Are they liberal at all? You know, what do they hate? What do they like?
So like if you come up with an agreement, there is still a chance that a judge will just like not sign it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It could be exactly what the parents want. And they're like, I don't like this. I think y'all need to meet at the police station to exchange. Well, that's not what we said. We said we were going to, you know, do this. And you would think that if it worked for the parents, you know, that it should work. But courts have the discretion. And they said, okay, I've seen cases like this before, and I don't think it's going to work. And it's crazy because they don't know you. That's why I, you know, try to encourage, if you can settle, I always encourage my clients. We know all the money comes in when you're talking trial. Mm-hmm. I still always encourage clients to settle. You don't know the judge. They don't know you. They don't know the baby. You never met this person a day in your life, and they're going to tell you how to raise your kid.
Yeah.
So if the two of them can work it out, it's always better. Always.
Yeah. That's crazy. In Utah, I mean, if you come to an agreement, the court will sign it. The only thing they won't let you agree to is waiving child support. You know, everybody's like, oh, let's just waive child support. I'm like, you don't want to put waive child support in your decree or it will get denied. So, you know, we can do deviations like you had talked about a little bit. But what do you feel like is the biggest challenges with your clients right now?
It's that uphill battle. Initially, my divorce client, a lot easier because you come in the door with your custody wife, right? So it's not as hard, but your legitimation client, usually people wait, and I say people, fathers are the only one that can be legitimated, so let's call it what it is. Dad wait until something goes wrong, right? And they call you and like, she's not letting me see this baby. How old is the baby? 5.
Yeah.
Have you been legitimated? No. No, and the baby is 5. So now you want me to chase this lady down, you know, and try to get her to sign off on something that she took place a long time ago. If you are going to have kids outside of marriage, I always say get your paperwork situated early on. I do have clients that called me and my girlfriend is pregnant. I'm like, okay, 3 months pregnant. Okay, well, congrats. I guess we can start something now, you know, but that's smarter because now you're risking it. I've seen legitimations be denied. I've seen a court say you waited till mom moved to decide to legitimate, even though you've been a part of this child's life all this time. You know, and that's just something that you're risking. That's the discretion thing I keep talking about. And your average client can't afford an appeal.
That's just
It's only a certain amount of clients that are going to go through an entire litigation and still have the funding to try to appeal the decision if they're not okay with it.
Oh my gosh, I've been saying this all along, like our paternity laws here in Utah are backwards. I've never heard something like that. But we have no cohabitation laws in Utah either. So if you've lived together and even had kids, but you didn't want to be married, if we can't prove common law and you guys have a house together, like there's not even a way for us to like help you other than file a real estate, like tenants in common action in Utah.
Mm-hmm. It's very weird. It needs to be, I think a lot of these laws need to be updated because they're still very outdated.
Why they're not updated? Because family law attorneys don't want to waste their time to go write these laws or bills. And the family law section, I mean, they should be the one that should be supporting and hiring lobbyists, but they don't have a lot of money either. Like, and the bar has bigger fish to fry when it comes to the legislation or the code that they need to change. But like, we're the only law that really specifically like hurts people.
Oh, yeah. It's your family. It's so emotionally charged, you know, and then it's like all on you. You got these clients that's going through they're going through something. So it's all on you to say, okay, well, what does the law say? Let me kind of stick to the book here and see what I can do for you, which is still all over the place.
will Georgia grant any kind of emergency order or relief for parent time in a legitimacy case?
Oh, yeah. If something happens or a child is in danger some sort of way, absolutely.
What do you have to show, though? Is not being able to see the child not considered an emergency?
No, unless the child is in danger. If I don't know where my child is and they're at the risk of being hurt, then maybe, yeah.
Can't every one of your cases just, we think she's on drugs and we don't know where she lives?
Yeah, anything could happen. I mean, we can allege it, and then you're going to get in there and they're going to show and prove whatever you have, and then they're going to say, this is not an emergency. We'll put it on a calendar.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're here. Can you go ahead and issue a ruling? No, we'll put it on the next calendar. We'll let you know.
So. Right.
And then you open yourself up for attorney fees for even going there. So,
really? So Georgia will grant attorney fees pretty heavily?
It just depends on how the case goes. If somebody is running up your bill, then I can pretty much show that and absolutely have a great shot at fees.
That's awesome. Utah is so, it is so hard to get attorney fees here. Unless you can show contempt, like on an enforcement action, like there's an order and it's so clear they violated it. But like we can fight protective orders, because protective orders are used as weapons in Utah quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, go to the hearing and we can show it was false and it was done, you know, completely to, you know, get a leg up in a divorce or whatever. I've rarely seen attorney fees granted. I mean, it's super frustrating.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because now you're putting your client in a position to have to weigh out, you know, the worth of all this. I've seen a lot of dads just throw their hands up.
Yeah.
Literally. Because if you don't want me to be a part of the child's life, you explain it to that child when you know, he or she is old enough.
That's why I loved. So I worked for Jolly and Jolly, which was a father's rights firm in Utah. And I love them because they really could help the little guy, like the guy that couldn't afford a big retainer who needed just some advocacy to, you know, get legitimized in Utah. We call it paternity, adjudicate paternity. But and I loved it. I mean, I felt like we were doing some really good work, and they're still around and they're still helping, you know, fathers do exactly what you're doing in Georgia. I mean, I love it. We don't do a ton of paternity at Coil Law anymore. Like I said, we've just become this really, you know, high net worth, high advocacy. We get super horrible conflict cases that we have to deal with, but it's, I just love what you're doing. It's so needed. And, you know, I will support you every day, every second before like doing like Cordell and Cordell, who has a national budget and tries to lure people in thinking they can help them. But.
And you never probably never know who's working your case. I really try to win. I think that's what sets us apart. You know, we have strategy sessions. I need to know exactly what it is my client wants so I can tell them what I think needs to happen for them to get it. Or at least get to the closest, you know, in the area of getting it. And I just imagine these larger firms kind of move cases along regardless of what the result is. We have a habit of internalizing some of these results. So we work really hard to try to make sure, you know, you're getting what you're looking for.
Right. Well, and when you work for yourself, I mean, you get to set that standard. And then, I mean, right off, like I was like, I set expectations at my firm, like right off, like this is, you know, expectations, because in Utah, everything is freaking subjective to whatever the judge wants. So there's no winning in Utah. It's literally like, you know, equitable usually means equal, but sometimes a judge can just decide that that doesn't what it means. But, and then we've got alimony, which is completely subjective. And we have case law and, you know, the statute that's supposed to say what it means, but the interpretation of what it means from every single commissioner and or judges, it's
all over the place.
All over the place. Does Georgia have alimony?
Mm-hmm. The standard is supposed to be one party's need and the other party's ability to pay. I've seen it go from one end of the spectrum to the next. So,
same.
You know, they have all of these factors you're supposed to look into. Are there other assets? You know, stuff outside of income. You know, how are bills paid? How long have they been? physical health, mental health, all that good stuff, to see if this other person can support themselves or how long it will take for them to be able to. And I think we have to get out of maintaining this certain lifestyle mentality thing, because, I mean, you don't get to leave the spouse and then keep all of the benefits from the spouse. Like, the spouse and the benefits go with the spouse, you know.
Oh, but in Utah, that's what they think. They get the best. We get these women that, I mean, I represent a lot of men when it comes to alimony cases, high net worth men, who these women come in and say, I cheated on you. I don't like you, but I'm going to take as much money as I can from you per month. And it's,
oh, no. See, here in Georgia, adultery is a barter act. So if I can show you cheated, you're not getting anything from alimony. But you know what? Here goes that discretion thing again. I've seen judges say, you're right. Before, no alimony. Instead, as equitable division, I'm going to give 60% of the house. And you're like, oh, great. Thanks.
Thank you. My gosh. It's why I love and hate our job, because it's like it keeps me on my toes. Like, I'm always having to learn and grow in my craft and what we're doing, and it's very strategic, just like you said, like strategy. Yeah. And I love that every client's different and we're able to really, you know, lend to the individual. But damn, I'm so sick and tired of going to court and hearing a judge do something that I had no idea, you know. And then sometimes judges try to make it seem like, well, you're the attorney, you should have known. How could I have known that you had a crappy breakfast and you're going to come in here and be the way, you know, like, it's just...
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. It's hard. It's hard what we do.
It is. It really is. I agree. And like you said, it takes a special somebody it's just so emotional and draining, you know, to just take on everybody's problems every day. Yeah. So I agree, it takes a special somebody to even want to go through that, you know. Because I'm told personal injury is just, you know, cashing a bunch of checks and just living life free, worry free, debt free, all of the above.
Oh my gosh. I actually started a personal injury firm too. I started a female founded personal injury firm.
Nice.
Because you don't see a lot of women on those billboards. And it does have its challenges, trust me. But I agree. Like, they're clearly making the money to be on billboards. I mean, as a family law attorney. But one of the things I wanted to, like, if I could give you like a little bit of advice from a business owner to a business owner, is I have really strived to create a better work life balance for my employees. So we bill less at COIL Law. We, we have a metric system that's not just around your billables. I try to allow people to go home and be home, versus having to continue. So, because of that, you know, I've created a firm where you can actually get maternity leave and paternity leave, which, you don't get in family law firms a lot. So, at least I had 4 babies in family law firms and I never got that. So, So, you know, we really try to strive to, because our job is so taxing, that we want to be able to give an environment. And because of that, you know, I don't have attorneys leave. We have a really great culture here and we just want to advocate for people. It's not perfect because the court system's not perfect, but we're doing our best.
I love that. I just love it. Yeah, we work Monday through Thursday from 8 to 5. The office is closed Friday at 12 p.m. Go home, turn everything off. I don't want to hear a peep from Friday to Sunday. If there's an emergency, myself or one of the other attorneys will handle it, nobody else. Just to try to, because I know how taxing it is. I was a paralegal first, so I know exactly how, you know, stressful it gets. So go home. We have company trips, take a trip every year together. I think we're doing Miami this year. It depends on how much working out I can do between now and then. we go out at least twice a month just for lunch. I have a company lunch twice a month, just kind of do the team building thing and things of that nature. Try to have not much of a high turnover. You know how hard it is to find good team members. That's always the struggle and scale, and anybody can dump thousands of dollars into marketing. But if you don't have anybody to work those cases, then it doesn't matter. So
exactly.
Really big on team building.
And a lot of people always ask me when they're like, how do you teach to be Jill Coyle? And I think that's been one of the biggest challenges of growing my firm is like, I can't teach how to be me, but what I can teach is the qualities that I have that have led me to be a good attorney. And so we really strive on developing those, I think, needed qualities, you know, empathy, understanding, patience, obviously. But then also, I mean, we got to be smart. Like family law attorneys, we are smart. We are always thinking on our toes. We're always trying to predict the next step and advocate for you. So there's a lot of things that, but then at the end, you know, like there's only one Jill Coyle. There's only one Joanna Boyd. And
that's right.
And we want to help as many people as possible, which is why we're growing our firms and being badass women in this community to continue bring the best to you. So, Joanna, I love you. I think you're amazing. I'm proud to be another woman in this very, very male-dominated world of legal. And I'm a fan of yours. So if you need anything from me, you know where I am now. I'd love to. And if you're ever in Dallas or Salt Lake, or if I'm in Atlanta, I want to call. I want to go to lunch.
Of course. Please do.
So Joanna, tell everybody a little bit of how to find you. Because again, her Instagram is awesome. I love following it. Great videos, great advice.
Thank you. You can find me on Instagram at JG Boyd Law. Our website is jgboydlaw.com. Same for YouTube at JG Boyd Law to pop right back up. That's about the gist of it. You can reach us pretty easily at any of those three. Facebook as well. Same handle.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, great job on what you're doing. I look forward to, you know, seeing all your success and keep at it, girl. You got this.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you.
That's another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Join us next week for another great topic. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.